Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hi, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
Oh, man, it sure is, isn't it?
It got real chilly in Austin, Texas today.
What's that? It's a Mr. Popper's penguin strolling down my street. That's how friggin' cold it is. Friggin' icicles hanging from the tree. And
Griffin wore a long-sleeved shirt.
I wore a long-sleeved shirt.
It's a big deal
from
here.
J. Crew. And I wore it, and I'm still wearing it, and it's my new favorite shirt. It's very cozy, and it's got stripes, which is very slimming, and it's the new fall look. And then for lunch, I went down the street. There's a new taco stand that just opened up like 50 feet away. I was like, let's try it out. Try one of their barbacoa tacos. It was ballin'. And then came home, hung out with you, hung out with our wonderful baby, and played around with him. And then we just got, I just had some donkatsu from our favorite Japanese place. It's a fucking good day. This is my first thing, and it's all the good stuff that I did today. Not a very relatable one, but man, some good stuff was done today. I'm feeling fresh. Got a new cup. Can we talk about the new cups? We went to Target. We bought new cups. This is another unofficial thing. We haven't started yet. But we got two copper mugs because I've been drinking Moscow Mules lately because we go to this farmer's market and they sell this incredible ginger beer. And so I started making Moscow Mules. Listen to this. The touch, the feel of copper cups. This is the new. But I also got a plastic cup. Do you want to tell them why I got a plastic cup?
I don't know what it is. I can't explain it. If you put a glass of water anywhere in my proximity, I will manage to knock it over.
Usually karate kick it over.
This was a extreme example. This was like a Rube Goldberg, actually. I was moving Griffin's very large body pillow, and it swung behind me, hit the glass of water off his nightstand. Didn't break.
It's a good glass. Yeah. Many other glasses have broken.
Yes.
They have met with a sorrier fate. And yes. So we actually had to go and buy a special cup for me, but really it's for Rachel. I love special cups, man. I just love when you look at that cup, I know what you're there for. Little copper cup you're there for Moscow Mules to be drank out of.
Hey, you guys, all these wonderful things are for free. That's not even the episode yet.
You haven't even gotten into the real
shit yet. These are little
amuse-bouches. Do you want to kick us off with our first thing?
Yes.
Okay.
This is a real sensory experience.
Okay.
I want you to put your nose in this.
Okay.
Take this a big old puff.
Kurt Vonnegut Jr.'s Welcome to the Monkey House.
It's an old copy, I would say.
Oh,
isn't that nice?
What is that?
You want to describe the smells?
So Rachel's handed me an old book, right? And so you get handed that and you think like it's going to have sort of that musty old book smell. I don't know that I would describe that as what this is. Like, I feel like paperbacks almost have a different. I'm going to get another.
What notes are you getting?
I'm going to give some ASMR too. Oh, that sounds incredible. I mean, it's definitely a little musky, but it's almost sweet. There's like almost a sweet, almost sort of, what's the word? Incense-like sort of smell to it. As if like it has paperback, because it's paperback, it has like absorbed the smell of the room around it. Mm-hmm. How long have you had this book? Did you have this in sort of your more crunchy phase that you went through?
I mean, yeah, actually.
Okay.
I probably got it in college.
That might explain it. I didn't know there was a Kurt Vonnegut Jr.
That's Kurt Vonnegut.
Why did he go by Junior?
I mean, he was maybe a junior.
All right.
but my wonderful thing is not Kurt Vonnegut, although I really
do. It's pretty good.
I do love Welcome to the Monkey House.
You know they're making a TV adaptation of Cat's Cradle?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be very good.
Old book smell is my wonderful thing.
I love this. I love this. I love this. But there seems like there's multiple old book smells in there, or is there just the one?
Well, here's what I'll tell you.
Okay. I'm so excited.
So an international team of chemists did a study in which they looked through a whole bunch of books.
Smelled them all. Those nasty perverts.
And they described the smell as a combination of grassy notes with a tang of acids and a hint of vanilla over an underlying mustiness.
I get that. Yeah, I think the vanilla is what was hitting my snoot.
This is from a Mental Floss article. Books are made up almost entirely of organic materials, paper, ink, glue, fibers. All these materials react to light, heat, moisture, and even each other over the years and release a number of what's called volatile organic compounds. So
this has nothing to do with how they interact with the environment around them. It's just you put ink and fiber and paper all in the same spot and you squish them together for a few decades and they just produce this scent?
Well, so books will absorb because it's paper. They will absorb smells.
Right.
I love the examples they gave. They said, some books have hints of cigarette smoke. Others smell a little like coffee. And still others, cat dander.
These are the different smells that there are. Thank you.
Well, no, I just thought it was funny. Like, they're describing a very specific kind of person that might have a bunch of old books.
A person who owns a lot of books probably also does have a cat and also does smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
So they use these compounds as a way to determine the condition and age of books by using special sniffing equipment.
Okay. Is it nose shaped? The sniffing equipment, is it like a
don't
big
know, Griffin.
Is it look like something sort of Pee Wee Herman-esque, like,
or Double Dare?
Is it a Double Dare challenge?
Or you pull a flag out of
you
the...
pull the flag right out of there.
So
Henry did that to me the other day. He did his own. I was laying down next to him, and he had this one razor sharp fingernail. It's very hard to cut all 10 of his nails at once, and so Rachel typically does like two at a time, which is I was just on the wrong part of the cycle there. He jammed that shit up to the fucking fatty part of his palm up into my brain looking for that, trying to finish that physical challenge. Holy shit, it was the worst thing I've ever felt in my life.
So I'm going to tell you about these compounds.
Yes, the compounds.
And I apologize to the chemists that listen. You're not going to enjoy my pronunciation. So I read an article that talks about the different odors of the different compounds that create this kind of aroma.
Okay.
Benzaldehyde is almond-like. And then we have ethylbenzene and toluene, which is a sweet smell.
These chemicals are worse. Are these chemicals where all smells come from?
Well, these are specifically the ones that you'll find in paper, ink, glue, and fibers.
I know, but is it when you smell an almond, it only smells like an almond because it's got benzo?
Oh, man, that is another episode. I cannot
help
you.
Shit, dude. I got to learn anything about science.
There's a 2-ethylhexanol, which is slightly floral.
Mm.
So I just thought that was interesting, you know, because I personally and a lot of people like that old book smell.
Yeah.
And I realize it's because the books are decaying.
And it's, yeah, that's probably not great, but in my opinion, it is miraculous that this is the smell that these books produce, because it's not like, you know, Gutenberg, when he was making the book, when he was inventing the book, was like, oh, no, we can't use this type of paper. It stinks. It's going to stink too bad in 30 years. You know, they were just using it. So we could have had, like, stink books with the stink chemical in it. You know what I mean? Like, sliding doors. We could, all books could just be like, ooh, how old is that book? 10 years old. Get rid of that thing. It stinks so bad. It smells like old pizza.
It's like a wine or a cheese.
Yeah, but it could have been anything. But this is what they smell like, and that's great to me.
That's actually, speaking of wine and cheese, it's true. Like, as it gets older, the compounds break down.
Because it has the cheese chemicals in it. It's good.
Yeah.
That was a very good one.
Yeah, so that's mine for this week.
You made me think of, like, the Strand. Is that what it's called in New York?
In New York.
There was a bookstore in Huntington that we would go into all the time that had, like, it was overpowering, the smell was. And that really took me back, smelling that old book. It really does take me back. It takes me back to a time when I read books at all.
No kidding.
How about my thing?
Go for it.
My thing is, you're gonna be, I think, mad because it's very basic.
Okay.
It's pumpkin spice.
Uh-oh.
Now, not pumpkin spice lattes, although we will get into that. I'm talking about the spice that is pumpkin spice.
Can I see if I can name all of them?
Please name all of the spices in pumpkin spice.
Cinnamon.
Yes. Wow, this is
nutmeg.
Yes.
Allspice, right?
Probably, but that's not listed in this list that I have.
Sugar?
No.
Oh. Clove?
Yeah.
Ginger?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And quote, sometimes actual pumpkin. Okay. I don't have a lot about pumpkin spice, except to say that I genuinely love it so very much. And I recognize that that is probably like, you hear that and it's like, oh man, I was really hoping they weren't going to talk about pumpkin spice on the podcast. I think it's incredible. I think seasonal, I'm more, I enjoy seasons. I enjoy holidays. I enjoy little checkpoints throughout the year that let you know that you've gotten to a new thing, and then celebrating traditions around those checkpoints, I think, is a very cool thing. And it's something that I've always really been attracted to. And the idea of a seasonal flavor is very exciting to me, because there's no like spring seasonal flavor. There's not really a summer seasonal flavor. Winter, I guess, kind of, but that's more attached to holidays. This is a holiday agnostic, just like, it's fall. It is fucking pumpkin spice time.
Well, and you know what's crazy about pumpkin spice? Like, I don't know if you remember this, but I remember the first time I had just like canned pumpkin without the spice. And I was actually surprised. I was like, this tastes nothing.
This doesn't taste like pumpkin spice at all.
Yeah.
So you cannot talk about pumpkin spice without talking about the PSL, the pumpkin spice latte. Starbucks introduced the pumpkin spice latte in 2003. It is now their most popular seasonal beverage, of course. As of 2015, 200 million had been sold. That data is 2 years old, and I imagine that that number has probably doubled at this point. When they were creating the recipe for the pumpkin spice latte, worked on it for a long time, up in Washington, and, you know, experimented with some stuff, tried some stuff out, trying to find the right balance between, you know, the pumpkin flavor and the more sort of like chemical, artificial flavors and sweeteners, if you will. And what they landed on was, what if there was not any pumpkin in it at all? So did you ever have a pumpkin spice latte before 2015?
I think so.
Yeah, there's no pumpkin in that one, unfortunately, even a little bit. There was not even a little bit of pumpkin in it. Around 2014, like, people started to catch on, like, hey, Starbucks, there's like no pumpkin in this thing. Also, it's like bright orange. So what, I guess, is going on with that?
Well, and it's shelf stable too, like, because I did used to work at a coffee shop. And those syrups, they just sit out on the counter all time. So it seems like if you're going to put real pumpkin in there, that might be kind of a challenge.
This blew my mind. And I realized, like, this is also a very old news story. And there was like, this was like a thing that everybody talked about a few years ago. I've been out of the pumpkin spice latte game for a little bit. Rachel got me one the other day and I drank it and I said, well, that's pretty sweet. That's extremely sweet. That is maybe because they changed the recipe in 2015 in response to these criticisms. They cut out the artificial colors. Now it looks like a coffee beverage again. And it now uses what is called a pumpkin pie sauce. Which includes sugar, condensed skim milk, pumpkin puree, coloring, and preservative.
That explains it, because I looked it up when I was on my way there. I looked up to see if it was dairy-free, and it is not.
No, so there is... it didn't taste very good.
Oh, no.
And I'm going to get back to talking about how good the pumpkin spice flavor is in general. But that pumpkin spice latte I drank like 2 days ago, like, it left me wanting. And I'm wondering if it's because they changed the recipe to make it less chemical and less like carcinogenic, apparently.
Yeah.
And now, doesn't it always seem to go? Wouldn't you just love to get in the car right now and just turn on fucking Joni Mitchell's Blue and just like drive to Dallas tonight?
Yes. 100%.
Windows roll down, that 60 degree air just coming. Oh my God, are you kidding
me?
With
the old recipe pumpkin spice latte in
with an old PSL and an old Four Loko.
I think there's people on eBay selling the old sauce.
Just rancid. Actually, it's probably still good. It's probably still good. There's definitely a site of Four Loko aftermarket. Anyway, okay. So introduced the PSL in 2003. Changed shit up in 2015. Now it's stronger than ever. Maybe. I don't know. I didn't think it was that tasty. I also don't like, I don't have as big a sweet tooth as I used to.
Whoa. Griffin.
What? I know I say a lot of stuff. Like, I'll eat some Skittles or whatever like that, but like, if I'm drinking a coffee, I don't want to get... It makes my tummy hurt. There it is, straight up. That much sugar just gets...
I was gonna say, I haven't seen you ever turn your nose up at any kind of sugar treat.
But because of the pumpkin spice latte, pumpkin spice fucking exploded. And now it is everywhere and in everything you ever eat. A few facts here. At Trader Joe's, the number of pumpkin products has steadily increased since the grocery chain began offering them in the mid-1990s, according to a company spokesperson. So I guess they were first in the game in sort of food stuffs. This year, Trader Joe's shelves will be stocked with more than, guess how many pumpkin-based items they have?
Now, is this 2017?
Yes. This is from a Business Insider article. Or a Washington Post article, one of the two.
32.
More.
67.
More.
93.
More than 70 items. More than 70 pumpkin spice items. Ooh. Are you kidding? That's more than one shopping cart can probably hold. But I will fuck with most of it because they know what they are doing around with some pumpkin spice stuff. They know what's up. According to Data Central Menu Trends, restaurants, pumpkin-inspired limited-time offers, are up 234% from 2008 to 2012. This is specifically not just about pumpkin-flavored foods. This is, like, only for the next two fucking weeks. Get in here, bring your pumpkin spice latte, because once it's gone, it's gone, which is sort of, like, another big appeal of the PSL. While overall limited time menu offers have grown 143% over the same period. I didn't read this close when I was putting it on here. This is more about limited time offers and how great they are. But there are new pumpkin flavors in, from anything from M&M's, Dunkin' Donuts, to flavored coffee K-Packs, to pumpkin flavored whiskey. There are fragrances. There's pumpkin spice lotion and shampoo and candles.
Yeah.
And all that said, it's all very good. I am excited to get myself my hands on some pumpkin pie. On
bread.
A pumpkin log, on a pumpkin bread. Oh my
Wait,
God.
Pumpkin log.
Yeah, like a pumpkin log. It's like a
the thing that's rolled. With
yeah,
the...
like a Swiss roll. Okay. Yeah, my mom always called it pumpkin log, but I guess a pumpkin Swiss roll would be a more accurate descriptor. Pumpkin spice baked goods are my shit. They're back. Pumpkin spice latte, a little cool on those, but pumpkin, man, you eat it and it's like you're eating like a month. It's like, I'm eating November right now.
That's beautiful.
And there's nothing else like that, I don't think. Right?
I mean, peppermint in December.
I guess so. Yeah, December. How come all that shit? How come with the? I talked just now about holidays and checkpoints and all that as being very good. How come pretty much all the big dope ones are like all back to back to back? Do you know what I mean? Like Halloween rules, Thanksgiving rules, and then Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Ramadan, whatever you celebrate. The winter
Valentine's
holidays.
Day,
no, Valentine's
Easter.
Day. Is, no, fuck that.
Are you kidding me?
No, it's good. It's good. But I'm
Valentine's Day and Easter candies are super good.
They're good, but neither of those holidays are as dope as Thanksgiving or Halloween or whatever December winter holiday you celebrate. None of them are that good. And all of those are right back to back. Thanksgiving's the best, and then wintertime holiday is the best. And they're right next to each other. I feel like Thanksgiving should be in June. Talk about it.
For those of you that don't know this about Griffin, he is very intense about holidays.
Oh, God, am I.
We'll probably do some special episodes.
Oh, then starting the day after Halloween, the next 8 weeks of episodes are going to be insufferable. I have a whole album dedicated to the Sufjan Stevens Christmas albums, straight up. That's coming down the pipe. Probably just going to do a whole baked good episode, just like straight up. And then one about, you know, the real meaning of Christmas.
Okay, we'll do some Christmas movies, I'm sure.
Yes. I mean, not just, and I don't just want to...
Thanksgiving dishes.
What I like about, like, the idea of candle nights from a Boom Bam and Adventure Zone is it's an all-inclusive affair.
Oh, yeah,
I like
you know
that.
We could do some Hanukkah dishes.
Let's do some Hanukkah dishes, dude.
Hey, Griffin.
Hi.
Can I steal you away?
Oh.
Ooh.
So I did a fusion there of Joey Lawrence into Home Improvement. What if? Folks, I'm recording this ad by myself because Rachel, she did something totally wild. She hopped on her electric e-bike and she was like, I am out of here. And then she zoomed off. She hit a ramp and flew up in the sky like an E.T. movie and just went so fast that I was like, dang, where'd my wife even go? And she yelled from over the horizon on a bike adventure. And so I have to celebrate that. I have to cheer for her on that. This bike that Rachel got from Electric E-Bike, it is, one, very sleek and stylish. It looks fast because it is. The battery lasts forever. It shows up at your door, ships for free. It's got a quick toolless assembly, and you can even fold it up for easy travel and storage. It is the perfect time of year to have a sweet little bike for yourself to go on your own bike adventures away from your husband. Anyway, go full throttle into spring with Electric E-Bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com, and please mention that Wonderful sent you in the post-checkout survey. That's electricebikes.com. Do you want to read that first Jumbotron for me?
Sure. This message is for past Gracie. It is from future Gracie. I know you're sad because of your breakup, but now it's fall. You're a 2L, and your friends love you, and I love you. You're a kick-ass future lawyer and a great dog mom. Remain on the smooth tip and keep listening to the best couple on the podcast airwaves. You rock. Hang in there.
That's a very good, powerful message. It just reminded me of Remains on the Smooth Tip. The fucking... Oh, sorry. That was the MC Scat Cat. That is how the record label described MC Scat Cat, as like a hip really? Guy who remains on the smooth tip.
Oh my gosh.
The greatest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Gracie, you keep doing it. Just
way
keep,
to go, Gracie. You're making it.
Claw
you're
at it. That fucking thing.
You're doing it every day. Congratulations.
Got another message. This one's for Dencha and Frog Monster, and it's from Nanner, who says, "Hey ladies, Dencha. Happy almost anniversary. Froggy, happy almost birthday. Hopefully by now I've gotten you to listen to all the McElroy products with me, and you are hearing this come from Griffin's sweet lips. If not, well, hey, Hannah, happy B-Day. Keep going. You got this. And even if you don't, the McElroys are always there. Right, Griffin? Right? Yeah, right. Yeah, I agree.
They're obligated to always be there.
I want to know if this is a real frog that was in the mix there, or if it's just like a cool college nickname.
Probably a cool college nickname.
Maybe it was a message for a frog. No, it's probably a cool college nickname. Frog Monster is maybe the coolest college nickname.
Well, hoopity dop dop, scoopity dee dop, deepity dabity doobity hoopity hoop. Hoopity doo doo, de papity dee dee, de good doo ba da. Whoopity doo doo, a rabbity hey hey, hoopity ha, it's a papa doo, baby.
Stop podcasting yourself. We don't even know anymore.
Find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you download your podcasts.
You want to hear my second thing?
I absolutely want to hear your second thing.
Okay, I've teased this before. You've heard me talk about them. If you heard our promo, you may have heard me mention it. Overalls.
Oh my God. This is a very fall episode.
I know. I love overalls.
This is true about Rachel.
I have Griffin got me a pair of cloth overalls that I have not worn very much. They're unfortunately too long.
Yeah.
I'm a very short woman.
Overalls are extremely difficult to shop for someone else for.
Yes. My preference.
Measurements do not come in overalls sort of metrics.
Well, also, my preference is for the denim overall, where the strap over the shoulder is adjustable.
Oh, so you can just take it right off like you're in TLC or something.
Well, no, you can adjust it so that the length on the bottom.
Or you could just let it hang like you're in TLC or something.
Or you could let it hang like you're in TLC. So
God, that'd be such a good look on you, babe.
Overalls were created in the 1700s.
What?
Yeah, dude. 1700s. They were called... Okay, now this article, I don't know if it can be relied on or not, but this article said the very first bib overalls were often referred to as slops.
Yeah, that sounds right. I think I've heard that before, since I'm from the, you know, the country.
It's a working man's outfit. At the time, they were not made of denim, but instead a tough cloth.
I bet that felt bad.
They were worn over another pair of pants.
Do you think back in the day they would also let a strap hang down? I want to know who came up with that first.
That would probably be a hazard.
It's such a hot look. How come nobody's doing this anymore? It was just TLC and Jennifer Aniston for a little bit. And then nobody.
Will Smith, back when he was the Fresh Prince, used to do a little...
He would wear overalls with one... Off. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. So then in the 1850s, they started specializing overalls for the industry. So it was white for painters, blue for farmers, and pinstripes for railroad workers.
Holy shit. Mm-hmm. I knew that, but I didn't know that.
I didn't think about it either.
But now that you said that, it's like, oh yeah, they are always wearing that shit.
In the early 1900s, Oshkosh B'gosh began selling bib overalls for children. Which, oh my gosh, the best.
Well, can we just say to Mr. Osh, Mr. Gosh, and Mr. Kabosh, I didn't say it right. Just well done. Good ingenuity, good entrepreneurial spirit. Thank you for your service.
The idea was that the kids could dress like their dads by wearing these overalls.
Oh my God, Oshkosh B'gosh.
Once they were featured in the Miles Kimball catalog, sales went through the roof.
Miles, the Kingmaker.
Yeah, I don't know who Miles Kimball is.
I can't stop thinking about the colors matching the different professions.
Mm-hmm. I know, it's mind-blowing, isn't it?
Sorry. I'll get my head back in the episode now.
So overalls became kind of a fashion thing in the 60s. And then where we are familiar with them is in the 90s, when a lot of musical groups would wear them with one strap unbuttoned. Also crisscross backwards.
Crisscross backwards. Overalls. Holy shit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I would say, so middle school is when I really went for the overalls.
Describe everything about your middle school fashion, please.
Oh, man.
I'll do mine if it makes you feel better afterwards.
Middle school is where I started to get into kind of thrift shopping. Mm. So I had a lot of large polyester
Piss.
Shirts.
But shit, it was 99 cents. You remember that? Nobody. baby.
Nobody wants that anymore.
Well, do you remember
yes,
it?
I do.
Okay.
I had a lot of...
It's the same title of the song and you said it.
There's a place in St. Louis I used to go to called Value Village that was enormous and had a lot of polyester button-down shirts with like butterflies and stuff on them. I used to wear little plastic barrettes in my hair, little baby barrettes.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Either a wide leg pant or overalls, as I mentioned. I used to
When you say wide leg pant, like how close to...
Not JNCOs.
No, I know, but give me like a JNCO like percentile.
No, not even close.
Not even like 2%
like
JNCO.
Like flare at the calf.
Like a bell bottom?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good look too.
Like a skater shoe.
What, you like know? A Vans or a...
Yeah, but probably not a Vans. We weren't name brand families.
Vans were cheap back in the day though. I remember Vans being fairly affordable. Chucks.
Oh yeah, I definitely had
Converse. Nonstop Chucks.
Yeah. Used to dye my hair red, purple.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Babe.
I never bleached it though, so it was always kind of like a hint of color.
Are there pics? I want to see pics of purple-haired Rachel.
Honestly, I don't think pics exist.
Will you dye your hair purple just so I can get an idea of like what you're? We can time it with the Halloween costume.
Okay. I'm not gonna do that.
Damn.
I'll
dye my hair purple.
No, you won't.
If you do it, I do it. I don't give a shit about my hair. Nobody fucking sees me ever.
That's true. People definitely do see me, though.
That's a good point.
A few days a week, which is going to be a
challenge. You wear a big hat.
Like a big blossom style
hat. Yeah, a big blossom style hat. Did you own one of those? I bet you did.
I did.
Yes.
I did. Yeah, that's about it. I would say just a lot of unnatural fabrics and overalls.
Loving it.
I remember... My friend at the time had a pair of denim Union Bay overalls, and I saw them and I thought, oh, cool, people are wearing overalls now. I'm going to go out and get some. I also happened to go out and get Union Bay overalls in a different color, and everyone was like, why are you trying to be like her? Why are you trying to change the flavor?
Were you like, no, look, they're pinstripe. It's because I work on the railroad. She's wearing
it was
white.
Devastating.
And, yeah. I'm sorry, babe.
I wore those for a very long time.
But to be fair, that is exactly what you did. And they did get you.
I know.
They caught you chomping flavor. I love you, but you can't be a flavor thief in this
I just
world.
Wear overalls all
I
the
know,
time.
But not because your friend, you know, wore them and then you got chomped
that
flavor.
I needed somebody to let me into the overall universe.
I think you're ready to come back.
I actually, when I was researching today, I got online to see if anybody was carrying an overall. Because last season, I saw them at Old Navy and Gap and everything.
Didn't jump? Didn't strike while the iron was hot? Damn it.
No, didn't see him yet. Oh, and, you know, pockets, hammer loop. Those are good, too.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Love all those pockets. Put a little pencil.
I had a lot of hammer loop pants, and I never once carried a hammer in them.
I feel like I did once, just for the novelty.
Why? You brought a hammer to school?
Well, no, not at school, when I was working around the house. Pull a hammer in there.
That's very good. I think I used to, like, I'd put an umbrella in it, just to be very practical. I think in middle school, literally all I wore was cargo shorts and bowling shirts. I was a heinous beast.
How did you have so many bowling shirts?
Hot Topic sold them, I think, for a while. No, I know it's not a good answer. Also, consignment shops, like nonstop. That is like where we got all our clothes growing up, was consignment shops. Okay, so how about my second thing?
Go for it.
I have a music thing, and it's kind of time to like Halloween a little bit, but I'll have to walk you there a little bit. My second thing is a musician and composer who goes by the name Disasterpiece. Real name Rich Vreeland, and he is a composer. He is mostly known for his work on soundtracks. He has a pretty wide catalog at this point. But he mostly does soundtracks, and that's what he's mostly known for, particularly in games, and one particular soundtrack for a movie that I want to dive into. So I'm going to play like a few things and sort of talk about like why I like him. He is like a very influential musician for me. A lot of the stuff that I did for the Adventure Zone soundtrack was inspired by listening to his music. And also, like, I think he's probably my favorite composer, like, soundtrack artist alive right now. So his first, like, major release was for a video game called Fez, which came out in 2012, and that was kind of his breakout thing. And it's probably my favorite game soundtrack ever. There are these incredible themes throughout and these leitmotifs that just thread the whole thing together. He uses very distinctive synths that kind of define his music. I'm going to get to the place where you probably know him from here in just a second. But he uses a lot of like 80s synth sounds and bit crushers. And for Fez, like the music was so like each song was so unique to all of the different environments in the game, which really helped to bring them to life. So just to sort of set up, if you've never heard any of his music before, this is the theme song to Fez. It's called Adventure. So the next sort of big thing that he did was a film soundtrack to a horror movie.
It Follows?
It Follows. That's yeah. right. So
when
this
you,
is
when you said like 80s, that's what I thought immediately.
Yeah. So he did the theme song to a really great horror movie called It Follows, which is just about this invisible monster that is only visible to you if you have its kind of curse, and the only way you pass the curse on is by having sex with somebody. And the whole thing is that the monster never stops. The monster is always, always, always walking towards you no matter what, and so you have to keep moving or bone down and spread the curse to somebody else. And so he did the Disasterpiece did the theme song to this movie, and it was sort of his first like major film soundtrack role. And it rules. It's extremely good. It has this very, very dark tone. It's very atmospheric with lots of like distortion in the sense. But at the same time, I remember the first time I saw the trailer, I knew nothing about the movie, but I was like, oh shit, that's Disasterpiece, because I recognize a lot of like the synths and sounds that he uses in the rest of his music. He does that here, but he uses them for more sort of subtle, like atmospheric, like building tension sort of purposes. It has my favorite theme song to any horror movie ever, and I'm not being hyperbolic when I say that. The title song to It Follows is just called Title, and it's great. That's not what I want to play. What I want to play is he threads like a lot of leitmotifs through like all of his work, and it's no different here in It Follows.
What are you saying there? Are you saying leitmotif?
Leitmotif is like
I don't know what that means.
It's like a recurring theme that is it shows up multiple times in like a collection or a soundtrack or anything.
Okay.
That reuses themes, and usually it ties those themes to a specific like character or situation. Oh, okay. And so what is so genius about the It Follows soundtrack is, in horror movies, this idea exists of characterizing the monster or the evil or something with a very like, with a recurring element in the music, right?
Yeah, so I like say that Halloween with Mike Myers,
right? That, or even to be even more simple, like the best use of this in Halloween, it's the, oh, how does the Halloween? Yeah. That's good. So that's like, what, 3 or 4 notes in an arpeggio going down. Jaws is 2 notes, right? Uh-huh. And that's it. Scream is just the violin shriek, the ring, right? Mm-hmm. And it follows, Disaster Piece does this with his same like synths, his like crunchy synths, but it's just one note and it's nonstop. And it is set usually to like a pulsing beat that is coming at you nonstop, just like the monster in It Follows.
Oh,
it is fucking incredible and it is fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
And it is throughout like every, throughout the soundtrack, like you'll be listening to it and you'll hear this bah, bah, and you'll be like, oh, that is where the monster shows up in the movie and you know it. And it just feels like this thing is coming for you. So this is, the theme song to the movie is great, but this is not that. It is the first song in the album called Heels. And it is going to show you just what I mean. Just it accomplishes so much just with one note. That's what I like really love about his stuff is how much he accomplished. Like his synths are beautiful and his compositions are incredible, but he accomplishes like so much just with the recurring use of like the simplest elements to like an extent where I don't know how he pulls it off. Like I don't know how you use a single note to like accomplish something like that. One other thing that he did last year, there was a video game that came out called Hyper Light Drifter. That was one of my favorite games last year. His soundtrack was incredible. He had a lot of acoustic piano and synths and stuff in it too. And just like his other stuff, there's themes that recur throughout, and a lot of it happens just with these three notes that he plays in these songs to sort of establish this kind of spooky, ruined, dying world. And it just plays throughout the whole thing, and just with three notes, like he gets across so much about this world, and I think it's just genius. So this is a song off that called Vignette Corruption.
Do you know anything about this dude? I always get intimidated by people's like performing names, and then it's like makes their whole persona a mystery to me. Like, who's this guy?
Yeah, no, his real name is Rich Vreeland. I'm pretty sure he's a New York dude. He's young. He's like 31. Mm. And yeah, it's I've been following him since Fez. I played Fez and was like, holy shit, this is the best. We have the Fez soundtrack on vinyl. I think it's really, really great.
Yeah.
And so it's been really cool to like watch him go on and do like more stuff. Not that making a video game soundtrack is like, you know, not laudable enough. But then to see him like go on and do It Follows and get a bunch of different soundtrack work has been really, really cool. And I don't know. I just think it's like, I think he's got a really great way of boiling down sort of these characterizations of these worlds into just a handful of notes that happen throughout the whole composition. And he just puts it, I talk a lot about Mort Garson, who did the theme song to The Adventure Zone. Well, he didn't do the theme song to The Adventure Zone. We used a song of his for the theme song to The Adventure Zone. He was this like 70s Moog electronic pioneer. And I feel like Disaster Piece has kind of a similar ear. Like whenever I hear a Mort Garson song, I'm like, oh, that's Mort Garson, because I can tell like the synth that he uses. And I feel the same way about Disaster Piece. So that's cool. Like,
it's so interesting to me that you did Nick Drake and now you're doing Disaster Piece. Like that there, I can't think of two more different.
They're very different, but I listen to both of them a lot. I listen to Disaster Piece a lot. Like I listen to a lot of soundtracks. I listen to soundtracks. Like I like listening to a soundtrack because usually I'm working when I'm listening to music and soundtracks don't have any words. And because Disaster Piece makes these soundtracks that help build character in a video game world, or in the case of It Follows, like a film world, I don't listen to that much It Follows because it is kind of spooky and a lot of it is very sort of dark and dreadful. But I listen to Fez and Hyper Light Drifter a lot because when the music is designed to make like a world feel more vibrant and alive and detailed, when you listen to that music when you're not playing the game or doing whatever, I don't know, it's like transportative in a way that I can really get down with.
I can see that.
A lot of this stuff I'm talking about, like minimalist powerful recurring themes and world building, all that stuff, like I think he's the best dude in the biz right now, and that's why I wanted to talk about him. Also because It Follows is a really good spooky movie.
It's super good. We should watch that this Halloween.
Yeah, for sure. I think we have it. We just haven't watched it. And probably because I'm afraid.
Do you want to talk about what some of our listeners are finding?
I would love to talk about some submissions. Yes. Here's one from Victoria from Seattle, who says, I really love winning a challenging round of classic Microsoft Solitaire. Watching the cards drop always feels like a little congratulatory fireworks show meant just for me.
Oh my gosh, that and Free Cell.
Free Cell and Ski Free and Jez Ball. Fuck yeah, dude. Not Minesweeper, though.
No,
too much work.
Yeah, too much work.
Here's one from Alex who says, my boyfriend and I have stumbled upon a very good Korean cooking show on Netflix called Chef and My Fridge. The premise is that celebrities bring their entire fridges and chefs have cook-offs using only the ingredients from the fridges. There's a lot of good-natured ribbing between the chefs during the competition, and it's become our go-to comfort food television for a lazy Sunday. Rachel and I read this and we were like, yeah, that sounds pretty good, and watched it while we had dinner tonight. Yeah. It was good. It's each episode's an hour long and there's only one cooking thing in there, and the rest of the time is sort of padded with these Korean celebrity sort of interrogations. At least that was the episode we watched, was all these chefs and hosts.
We only saw one of the celebrities, so there were two celebrities on there, I think.
I don't know.
We saw the second half.
I think this was like a best of anyway. I enjoyed it. I really, really loved the cooking section, but a lot of it is like, I feel like I would enjoy it a lot more if I knew who Korean celebrities were. Yeah. I know who some Korean celebrities are, but not this particular Korean celebrity. Here's another one from Rebecca who says, hey, Griffin and Rachel, I was recently watching Frasier with my beautiful mother when she muted the television and said, apropos of nothing, I used to do ventriloquy semi-professionally, and I don't regret a second of it. And then immediately went back to watching the show. While I laughed so hard, I thought I was going to permanently damage my body. Any further questions were curved in favor of watching Frasier. I certainly don't think this was a universal experience, but oh my God, did it make my year.
Do you think she thought, today's the day, I'm going to reveal my secret. What television show would be most appropriate for revealing this secret? And she landed on Frasier.
It's possible. Was there a good time to tell your child that you used to semi-professionally be a ventriloquist? I don't think so.
As soon as possible.
Does Jeff Dunham have kids, and do you think that they know what daddy does all day?
I'm sure.
The dark deeds.
I don't know that ventriloquists are big fans of Jeff Dunham.
Probably not. I think there's probably ventriloquists who listen to this show who are like, don't say Jeff Dunham. Ah, fuck, he said Jeff Dunham. I don't want to talk about Jeff Dunham, but I end up doing it a lot for reasons beyond my comprehension. Okay. Here is one last one from Whitney who says, a wonderful thing I enjoy in fall is toast soup. You heard of this?
I don't think so.
It's a few slices of lightly burnt toast simmered in bacon-infused chicken stock, blended together with a bit of Cornichon brine, Dijon mustard, and butter. It's so strange and soothing all at once and a perfect fit for a rainy day.
I mean, it sounds delicious.
Sounds really, really, really good.
I wonder
good.
How burnt this toast has to be.
So a little bit, because they sent a recipe along. It's Jennifer McLaughlin's toast soup on food52.com. You can go find it there. And they talk about like bitter being kind of a flavor that nobody really uses. So it's like a little bit burnt, a little bit. I like it. I want to eat this. I'm looking at a bowl of it now. It looks real good. Toast soup. I also just love, like, those two things shouldn't go together, you know? Egg cereal. What? Who thinks of these things? In order to get to toast soup, there was probably a chef who had to, like, walk there, and they probably did. We're like, all right, egg cereal. Let's try it. Damn it. No.
Well,
spaghetti waffles. Still no. Damn it.
Think about soup in a bread bowl. You know? Like, you're
think about bread in a soup bowl. That's what we're doing. <Exactly. laughs>
It's beautiful.
Oh boy, this has been wonderful, and thank you all for listening. And if you leave a review on iTunes or tell a friend or do literally anything to help us out, we would appreciate it. I didn't mean for that to sound like come on, you ingrates. No, we do, we appreciate your help, and we appreciate Max Fun for having us on the network. Go to Max Fun and maximumfun.org and check out all the great podcasts there. What are you into these days, baby, in the Max Fun milieu?
Oh my gosh. I listen to a lot of shows. Stop Podcasting Yourself just recorded their 500th episode.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so did JJ Go, right?
Jordan Jesse Go did theirs, I think, last week.
Wow. They all had such an early start.
I know. And I like One Bad Mother. I like Bullseye.
Classic.
I like all the McElroy shows.
Oh, thank you. You can go to McElroyShows.com and check out all the great podcasts and videos there. Thank you, baby, for setting me up for that one.
You're welcome.
You literally said McElroy shows. Is there anything else that we need to talk about? Oh, we have a P.O. Box. It's P.O. Box 66639, Austin, Texas, 78766. Tweet at Rachel. Let her know where all the great overalls can be bought this year.
If you are interested in sending me an old pair of overalls.
You can't say that because this it's a small box and two pairs of overalls will fill this thing up.
Well, no, I was just going to request that they hit me up and ask me what my size is. I'm not going to give it out on
air. Oh, so you, but you have just suggested, hey, listeners, hit me up and ask me what my body sizes are. And that seems okay.
Maybe I shouldn't.
Maybe you should.
I just really want overalls.
I know you. I'll figure it out.
Okay.
I'll make you overalls. Okay, I'll take my old jeans and I'll take two belts and I'll make overalls out of
them. Take all those cargo shorts you still have and turn them into a pair of
overalls.
I have
one pair of cargo shorts. Get out of my butthole. Thank you all for listening. Until next time, I'm Griffin McElroy.
I'm Rachel McElroy.
Then the end of the end.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.
I love it.
Good
man,
stuff.
Every time.
Well, I hope that you're enjoying this podcast you're listening to as much as we are pretending to. But anyway, why not listen to another podcast too? It's called The Flop House.
And on our podcast, we have recently watched a movie, often a bad movie, and we review it on our podcast, but mainly talk about other stuff and, I don't know, hang out.
It's all about hanging out, feeling like you're being with your best friends. Who are your best friends? Us three. Dan McCoy, Emmy Award-winning writer for The Daily Show, Stuart Wellington, owner of the best bar in Brooklyn, Hinterlands, and Elliot Kalin, former Emmy-winning head writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, former head writer of Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return, so many things. Author of the upcoming children's book.
All right, that's enough.
The Elliot's credits just go on and on.
Yeah, but if you like the idea of listening to three funny guys talk about bad movies, then why not come over and listen to The Flop House? It's available at MaximumFun.org or wherever fine podcasts are found.
So get out of here.